This is Stormtrooper One. In case you were just way too busy to listen to our last show, this is what you missed.
Travesty of a human being. He is now a monster. The very monsters he fought, he has now become. So if you look at the real meaning behind it, I can't ever fault George Lucas for doing a scene like this. Now Jar Jar Binks is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
You want to hate on Jar Jar, that's fine. But this, I don't think it should warrant the most hated moment in Star Wars history. I think that's ludicrous.
I think when I went back and I rewatched Revenge of the Sith and everything, I get to this scene. I think what just hurt it was the scene prior when Padme passes away.
Yeah, that scene. That scene pisses me off more.
Yeah. I look at fans.
Uba, no aborte. Oh.
Warning, from the back to tank contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue.
We would be honored. Join us.
How are you feeling? Your latest workups on your condition indicate that all damage has been reversed. Recovery is total. I believe you have been quite fortunate. No further thanks are necessary, Commander, but you are most welcome. It is my function and pleasure as a Metroid to help and heal human beings.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Star Wars From the Back to Tank. I am Michael Flores, your host, and I am in studio with the one and only David Sabal. Hello, David.
Yeah, so my eyes are not burned out by the eclipse.
I do apologize. Certainly apologize to the listeners who were waiting for the show to go live. We decided at the last minute to postpone about 15, 20 minutes due to the total solar eclipse. You know, hey, why not, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's still science.
Yeah, and also I just figured a lot of people were probably going to be more interested in that than talking about science fiction. Real science over science fiction, Dave. Which is more important?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you throw sex into the equation, then that's going to take priority over all of it, right?
That takes priority over all of it. Yeah. I mean, if you add sex to science fiction, it becomes more important than science.
Yeah, a total solar boob eclipse would be great. I mean, I would be on board that one. All right, so we have a lot of things to get through, which hasn't been the case lately for the Star Wars shows. We've been kind of...
Dude, did they just bombard us in, like, a short amount of time with so much news?
They did, and it's... I'm happy for it because I feel like the last, 2 months or so, we've been kind of grasping for news. We would take one article and really delve into it. Not that I'm trying to take a less than interesting topic and make it interesting. That's not the case. But we are grasping for topics, whereas this week we're not going to be getting into everything. I guarantee you there'll be two or three topics we're just not going to have enough time for during the allotted 60 minutes of the broadcast.
Well, the funny part is the closer we get to December, I mean, September 1st is around the corner, and September 1st is when they release all the toys.
Is it going to be September 1st again?
Yeah, because like even at my work, that's the day that they release the new Star Wars Lego sets, and I've seen them. And it's... I'm like going... September 1st cannot come fast enough.
Yeah.
Because after that, then more news is coming out. There's already toy spoilers all over StarWars.net talking about...
Toy spoilers. Come on.
Dude, remember when Force Awakens came out and toy spoilers were everywhere because of the some of the toys had dialogue from the movie.
That sounds so silly. Oh, toy spoilers.
But dude, seriously, remember there was that one helmet. Everyone was talking about the helmet of Force Awakens giving away dialogue from the movie.
I remember, because you totally lied to us about certain dialogue.
Yes, I got it wrong.
Completely messed it up.
I completely goofed that one. Maybe I'll goof up this one, because they're releasing the Force Gauntlets of Kylo Ren.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. I don't know. Do you think it's going to get so bad with toys and babies who don't want nothing to be spoiled?
Do
you think they'll start putting like spoiler warnings on voice toys, like toys that actually talk?
Dude, would you be surprised?
I don't know, man. I think we've gotten way too we've kind of slipped in this weird area in terms of the geekdoms. Don't get me wrong, I hate spoilers, but not everything's a spoiler. A preview for the next movie isn't a spoiler. A trailer isn't a spoiler. A movie poster isn't a spoiler. Toys aren't spoilers. A spoiler, by definition, from when it first started catching fire on the web, had more to do with the fact, had more to do with story, plot-driven elements. The way a character looks with a sideburns and a particular hairdo doesn't amount to a true or equate to a true spoiler.
You bring up a good point.
That's overboard.
What is a spoiler?
Something that ruins the story. Because Luke wore his cape a certain way in the trailer, and now you have all these theories. That's not a spoiler. That's you taking something and running with it. Yeah, it's the spoiler thing is ridiculous. As long as you're not just ruining story elements, and by story elements I mean character leaks, whereas we don't know certain cast members who they're actually playing. I think if that were to be released, yes, that would be a spoiler as well, because it has to do with the plot and the story of Episode 7 or Han Solo spinoff, whatever movie we would be talking about.
I mean, the only thing that could be classified, now that I'm thinking about it, is anything dealing with the character of DJ.
Who's DJ?
Remember, it's Benicio del Toro's character.
Yeah.
Because he's been so kept in secret, I think that could be close to being a spoiler, because like any toy released on him is going to give away that background that they've been keeping a secret for so long.
Right. And they're not going to do stuff like that. Just like they didn't give a lightsaber to Rey and the toys. There's
That's
things they didn't do. They did. In fact, Rey has no lightsaber in any of the promos.
The promos. That is true.
Because that would have been a spoiler. Lucasfilm and all the waivers and disclaimers and things you have to sign before you even breathe on set, they're going to be the first ones to worry about spoilers. So if they're releasing something like a toy or whatever else it may be, a collectible, they're not going to ruin the story for you. So just chill out, everyone. Simmer down.
Simmer down.
So first bit of news, Dave. And I think this topic is probably going to roll over into the entire first segment of today's broadcast. And that is the Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi movie that is more than just rumored to be in development by Disney right now. It's early development. It's not being picked up by comicbook.com or one of those other shitty websites that post rumors and speculation that has no validity to it. This was released by The Daily Variety and Hollywood Reporter. Now, I'm not saying they don't have their history of posting foolish articles, but for the most part, those are respectable trade magazines and sites that usually only post things if it's almost certain. In terms of movie news, they don't post speculation. So the fact that Variety and Hollywood Reporter put out this article puts a little bit more, I have a little more faith in the fact that this is in fact true. It hasn't been officially announced by Disney, correct?
No, it hasn't been announced, but basically in the article it says sources for Variety that are connected to Disney say that Disney is in early development on the film centered around the Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Okay, now, the word sources is going to be a focus for today's show, because when you're dealing with rumor, yes, I think there's probably a little bit more truth to Obi-Wan. But then, after Obi-Wan was announced that it was potentially in early stages of development at Disney, we then got a slew of additional articles from various sources all saying that we're not just getting an Obi-Wan spinoff, that there is a lot of standalone films in the works. And that's nothing new. We already knew there were going to be thrown around ideas. As we discussed at the, I believe, the beginning of the year, we talked about Kathleen Kennedy's plan of action coming into 2017 and having a better view of what they're going to be doing moving forward after Rogue One's success and, of course, The Force Awakens' success. And so we knew all these things were going to start coming out really soon. But the names we have attached, or the concepts, we have Obi-Wan, which we're going to talk about first.
Yes.
Then we have the alleged Yoda standalone film. Then we have the alleged Boba Fett standalone film, which has been rumored for quite some time.
For a very long time.
And that concept died when Josh Trank got fired for being a loser.
Yes.
Then we have the Jabba the Hutt standalone movie that's being rumored as well.
That one caught me off guard.
I have to admit, it did as well for me. It did catch me off guard. And I even made a post on Facebook that was a little bit trolly of me when all this news came out. And I feel like a troll. I do feel like a troll, but
you transformed into a troll.
I did. And I think not every Star Wars fan is a troll, but every Star Wars fan has a little bit of troll inside of them.
Yes.
And I got a little trolly. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not keen on any of these ideas. And who am I but just a humble Star Wars fan? But I feel like they're squandering so much potential for the Star Wars universe to pick low-hanging fruit. I think the Obi-Wan idea, I know we joke about it, we make fun of it, and, you know, what's there to tell from Obi-Wan? He was sitting on Tatooine jerking it with sand, as we said last week, I believe. But to be serious for a moment, I can see that they can definitely take an Obi-Wan concept and definitely make it interesting. There's a lot of time there. So if anything, I'm okay with it. And this is what I posted on Facebook. I'm going to read it directly from my Facebook page so that I can get it right, because I don't think I can say it as well as I posted it the few days back.
You don't want to be the troll that basically does a misstatement.
And to be honest with you, David, I'm a little offended that you didn't like this. Do you not agree with me? you didn't like it on Facebook. Okay, let me read what I wrote. Okay, I put, so Obi-Wan, Yoda, and a Boba Fett standalone are rumored to be in the works. And this is before the Jabba the Hutt one was announced, okay? Although the fanboy in me is giddy, the cynical movie guy in me wonders when Disney and the new Lucasfilm will attempt to do something totally new. I doubt they will, because they are terrified to come up with something on their own that was not already conceived in some way by George Lucas. And I almost deleted that because I don't want to be a troll. And then I went back and I was like, you know what? There's some truth to those words. You like that? There's some truth to my words, David.
There's some truth.
How more arrogant can you get? There's some truth to my words there. And if you understand the movie business and the movie industry, this is their tactics. Release sequels. Release reboots, remakes, because there's an audience there for the most part. They feel like it's better to do something safe that's known rather than something new. And if you look at, unfortunately, the movie, the track record for the movie industry for the last 3 or 4 years, they're right. Movie studios, movie execs are right. People are not going to see the latest big blockbuster movies anymore unless they're sequels and remakes and superhero films. So I understand that they're at a crossroads themselves at an industry, and they need to make sure that they're successful. But with Lucasfilm, I feel like they're completely terrified to come up with something new. Back in 2013, 2014, when Disney bought Lucasfilm, that sound about right?
Yeah.
Okay. When that happened, the reason why we were excited, Dave, was because we were going to see more Star Wars, not more the same things, not more the things we already know, but new areas of interest that we grow to love, and we end up having that relationship with that character in that movie, like we did and starting in 1977 with New Hope and then moving into the prequel era and then the cartoons. And I feel like they're just throwing away any chances at real creative thought or originality for easy, low-hanging fruit, something that already is sold. The concept of Yoda is already there. The concept of Han Solo is already there. The concept of the Death Star and Rogue One is already there.
The concept
of Jabba the Hutt is already there. Boba Fett, already there. I want to see, even though I feel as a fanboy, yes, these things are exciting and I would love to go see it. But the movie guy in me, the reviewer and the critic, the cynical side of me is like, this is bullshit. It's bullshit. Give us something new. Give us the Old Republic era. Take us into the ancient history of the Sith Lord. Tell us new things that the mainstream audience has not been privy to yet. There is so much to tell, and yet they're giving us the same things.
I totally agree with you to a degree. Because like when Rogue One first came out, I honestly felt that that was something new. It wasn't regurgitated. We didn't get like characters that we all knew. We were introduced to brand new characters that we actually got attached to. And Rogue One, I think that was one of the strengths of Rogue One, was actually being a different type of Star Wars film.
Okay, Rogue One was a good movie. I enjoyed it. I felt like them returning to the well for this was fine.
Yeah.
Because they needed to find their ground with the audience. I get it. What they did with Force Awakens was smart. What they did with Rogue One was smart. They wanted to reestablish their footing on the box office in a way that they would sure to be successful.
Yes.
I get it. Now that they're successful, why don't we go by the words of what Kathleen Kennedy said during December of 2016, just a few short months ago, where she said, we will not look back anymore. Starting in 2017, we're going to understand the layout of the Star Wars fandom and the mainstream audience, and we're going to base our movies on moving forward. We are not going to look back anymore. Everything will be new ideas. And sure enough, they're backtracking on her words.
And that's where I now totally agree with you, because they have established brand new concepts and brand new ideas with us, and now they decide to backtrack. And I'm like going, Obi-Wan, just like you, this is a movie that I've been wanting for a long, long time. We all, fans everywhere, wanted an Obi-Wan film. Why? Because Obi-Wan's one of the most fan favorite characters in all of Star Wars.
Honestly, they should have done the Obi-Wan movie before Rogue One.
Before Rogue One.
And that should have been our returning to the well moment.
Yeah.
Because Ewan McGregor is an amazing actor. And there's a part of me as well. Don't get me wrong, dude. If I had to pick any of these, I would pick the Obi-Wan. I would pick the Obi-Wan storyline over the Han Solo movie we're getting right now.
Oh, absolutely.
But my point is that we have Rogue One and Han Solo. How many more are we going to do before it wears on the audience? And this is something that the box office and the movie execs never take into account. They look at the immediate cash grab. They don't look at what's going to start irking people. They're going to be like, oh, an Obi-Wan movie now? Oh, a Yoda movie? Oh,
I think
they're going to lose interest, and they're going to lose the bulk of their mainstream audience. And next thing they know, they're going to create a world that can't cross over into the mainstream. And they're going to be like Star Trek was in the mid 2000s.
Exactly. And that's where I'm at now with the talk of a Yoda film, a Boba Fett film, a Jabba film for all. I don't know why they would do a Jabba the Hutt movie, but even with like Boba Fett, I have so many fans saying, oh, I want to see a Boba Fett film. I'm like,
Boba Fett,
why do you want to see a Boba Fett film when the strength of that character was the fact that he was the man of mystery?
Let's be honest. He was weak in Attack of the Clones, and he died like a chump in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. And it'd be like, it's the reason why I've always stated I don't want to see a Darth Maul film. I don't.
Shut your dirty mouth.
Because unfortunately, Darth Maul up to this point, now take out Rebels and take out Clone Wars, everyone wanted a Darth Maul film before that. And I'm like going, why? Look how he went out. He's only been in one movie. And the strength of that character is the mystery behind him. Once you actually break that mystery, and that's the fear I have with the Yoda film. Yoda is a figure of mystery. We don't know.
Oh, he's Yoda the international is. Man of mystery, intergalactic man of mystery.
And it's like,
he's the Austin Powers of Star Wars, David.
You don't want to ruin that. You don't want to ruin the mysticism behind Yoda.
Now, let me tell you how this could work. All right. Now, again, taking rumors and how many times when a source close to the project says, and suddenly we realize when the actual news does drop, there are slight similarities, but usually the sources were off base. Now, let's say the sources are incorrect in the fact that we're not getting a Yoda or a Boba Fett or a Jabba the Hutt movie per se, but they're all going to have a part in the Obi-Wan movie. Let's say that, you know, sometimes sources get their wires completely crossed. They usually have their thumb on the pulse slightly because obviously they're not in the writing room. Things can change. I guarantee you the director isn't leaking this. Somebody of importance usually isn't leaking this information.
Yeah.
It's someone who's kind of on the outs. All right. Now, what if there are truth to all of this? And if there is truth to all of this, then this news could work in a big way. And I'll tell you how I'll be sold on this, okay? If Obi-Wan was announced, let's say this truly is the standalone movie, right? Now, I think we can all agree, David, as Star Wars fans, there's a huge mythology of Star Wars gap between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. There's a big gap, and George Lucas never did it justice, by the way, on how, when you look at the way he ended Revenge of the Sith, he didn't do it justice. The way it was very nonchalant, thrown at us at the last minute when Yoda says, more training you have, Qui-Gon has learned how to talk from the netherworlds. And then we're now led to believe, oh, okay, that's why in New Hope, Jedis now get sliced. They disappear. It's a learned Jedi technique. There's a huge missing gap of Jedi mythology that can definitely be explored. Now, we also have to remember Obi-Wan was on Tatooine. We also have to remember Yoda's alive at this time. We also have to remember Jabba the Hutt is from Tatooine. We also can remember that Boba Fett has business on Tatooine, as we've seen with Han Solo and Jabba the Hutt. Throw all those things into a box, and you have co-stars in an Obi-Wan movie.
You mean kind of like what they did with the Han Solo film when they started announcing Lando and
right.
Chewbacca.
You can introduce side characters to add more to the story. It's not saying, and I'm not going to say Jabba the Hutt's going to be a main star in the movie or even Boba Fett. But as we know, if you look at the comic book, the Darth Vader, the first release of the Marvel storyline, issues 1-7, we find out that Boba Fett's the one who, and this is canon, Boba Fett's the one who discovered Luke Skywalker's name and gave that information to Darth Vader. And that's how Darth Vader found out the rebel pilot who blew up the Death Star was his son. So when you start seeing connections like that in the comic books, you can start seeing where this source might have missed the mark a bit in his leaking of information. Now, if that's the case, all these players have a part to play in the Obi-Wan standalone movie, then I can get behind that. Absolutely, because all of it makes sense.
Then fits that mythos.
Absolutely. And let's say through the Obi-Wan standalone, we explore more of Yoda's mythology and his background. I'm okay with that because it's being done in Obi-Wan's movie. But if we have an Obi-Wan, a Yoda, a Boba Fett, a Jabba the Hutt, it's silly and it's an overkill of and it's returning to the well way too many times. And I guarantee you after the second or third one, people will be burnt out and they will say this is stupid.
That's why I think
the first thing, David, my mother said, who's a casual, when I say casual, she loves the movies, but doesn't do anything else. Okay. The first thing she said when she saw the Rogue One trailers, all the Death Star again. Didn't we see that kind of in Force Awakens? I was like, yeah, kind of. What was it? Starkiller Base? What was it? And then she said, wasn't every movie revolved pretty much around the Death Star? I'm like, yeah. She's like, why are they doing this again? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. She loved the movie, but the fact that a casual Star Wars fan, who's the representation of the mainstream audience who goes to see the movies, said that. How long is it going to take before the next person says that about the following standalone films if they're released?
And I think that's why the next two standalone films are so important. Han Solo, we already know, seems to be on good track. But as I said before, the strength of the first standalone film with Rogue One was taking a concept and introducing new elements to it.
Yeah, but really, was it a new element, Dave? When you really think of the story, it was about a story we already knew. We already knew the plans were stolen and they were given to Princess Leia. Princess Leia had to escape Vader. Yes, it was a cool story, but it was an unneeded story. It didn't really do anything in terms of developing the universe of Star Wars. When you really think about it, did it really expand and develop the world of Star Wars outside of what we learned about the Wills of the Force or the Guardians of the Wills?
Guardians of the Wills.
And honestly, we didn't really learn anything about the Guardians of the Wills. It was just stated, and then through the expanded universe comics and books, they've kind of delved into it now. So take away the Guardians of the Wills out of there. What did Rogue One really do to expand the world of Star Wars? It was a movie not created to expand the universe of Star Wars. It was a movie created to grab the mainstream audience for a second time to say, guys, this is Star Wars. This is what we're doing now. And again, I'm okay with that because I feel like it needed to be done.
Yeah.
To establish, as I was saying, the foothold on the box office and to kind of set the precedence of, this is Star Wars, guys. We're back. We're here to stay. We're giving you a movie every year. But now that they've done that, I think they have earned goodwill with the audience.
Yeah.
I think the audience is not cynical and upset anymore, unfortunately, even though I love the prequels. They're not upset anymore. I think for the most part, most Star Wars fans are excited about the future of Star Wars, and including the mainstream audience. And many of the mainstream audience didn't like the prequels either. So now that they've proven what they can do now in this new era of Star Wars, I think they should move forward and say, let's not look back right now. Let's not do that. We can go back. Yoda's a CGI character. We can go back to him at any point. Again, the Obi-Wan idea, if they're ever going to do it, they need to do it now because Ewan McGregor looks the part. He's actually the age he should be right now.
He should be the age now. Yeah.
So I think it really works. To make the decision for Obi-Wan. Again, I'm not keen on it, but I think it makes sense to do the Obi-Wan movie out of all the other concepts that have been rumored to be circling.
Yes.
Now, Dave, really fast, I want to backtrack because I don't want to diminish your thoughts. Do you see what I'm saying about Rogue One? Because you mentioned that we got a whole new stories and whatnot. Do you understand where I'm coming from with Rogue One, that it didn't really do much to expand the world of Star Wars?
Yeah, to expand the world of Star Wars, yes. I understand. It didn't expand the world of Star Wars enough. Because, like, yeah, we got brand new characters and the Guardians of the Wills and stuff like that, but it was almost kind of like baby steps. And now, in my opinion, it's kind of like, I'm not really that psyched for the Han Solo film. I'm not hyped for it right now. Because I feel that, okay, we're past the baby step phase. We need to actually start walking.
Right. And that's another thing is I am excited for the Han Solo movie now that Ron Howard's involved. But again, I feel like they could have done something else. However, what's Han Solo going to do to expand the universe of Star Wars?
And exactly.
That's how you have to look at it. Han Solo has always been a secondary character to the main storyline, which is the Force and the Skywalkers. And I'm willing to move past that as well. I understand that Star Wars is going to finally open up and be a lot more broad than just the Skywalker saga. But with each installment of the Skywalker saga, it's always been used to open up the world and the idea of the Force and how the world should look at the movie universe of Star Wars as it is at that time. Han Solo, what's it really going to do other than tell a backstory of a character? Is it going to expand the universe? Is it going to tell something that's vital to the continuity of the Star Wars universe, the connected universe. That's what I'm saying. Look at the movies that Marvel has done with Doctor Strange and Guardians of the Galaxy and Avengers. Even though I'm not the biggest fan of the Avengers movies, for the most part, each new installment of this connected universe has added to their world.
Yeah.
It's added to the world to the point where we've gotten in the Marvel movies the distrust of mutants. Okay. And that's kind of been a slow to people with superpowers. That has been kind of the slow process from phase one all the way down to are we in phase three of Marvel?
I think we're in phase two.
All the way to phase two. And I think we're closing in now. Yeah. So if you see, there is a story that was told, even though I don't feel like every Avengers movie was written well, there is a big story that's all telling one tale that's all going to connect.
And it adds into making the world more broader.
Exactly. What is Rogue One? What has Rogue One and Han Solo done to tell the expanded, growing story of the Star Wars universe? It's done nothing but backtrack and retreading on things that we've already seen and done. And this was sold to us, this cohesive connected universe, David, has been sold to us as a world like Marvel, where we get one cohesive story that tells one big story. And it feels like we're in a circle and we're only focused on a little tiny speck in the circle because we're afraid to go outside the circle, because outside that circle is an area George Lucas never mapped out. And we're afraid. We're afraid because Magellan Lucas hasn't mapped this yet. Oh my God, what are we going to do? This is uncharted area, guys. We need to stay in here.
Stay in the safety zone.
Yeah. Davy Crockett, George Lucas needs to come back. That's my point, Dave. The entire 30 minutes that I've just been going down on this rant has been steered by one thought. They're afraid to go outside the circle. They keep talking about the connected storyline.
Yeah.
Even the stories that we're getting, like, except for a few of the books that has expanded, they're still staying inside a circle. They have not broken out the circle yet to really kick us in the balls.
And it's funny because they decide to go out of the circle in other forms of media. They did it in the comics. They've done it in the video games.
They did it with Star Wars Rebels.
They did it with a TV and animation. But with movies, it's almost as if they're just scared.
They're pussyfooting. They are terrified. I'm telling you, David, they are terrified to do anything different because it's uncharted. They are raping George Lucas's ideas. And once they're out, they're fucked. I guarantee you that's how they feel. I don't think that's the case. There's plenty of smart people who understand the world of Star Wars that can probably do justice and pay homage to George Lucas's Star Wars ideology and his concepts and theories. Look at Dave Filoni, as we always talk about. They shouldn't be afraid. With the massive success of Star Wars Rebels, David, they should not be afraid. Now, you say Rogue One is a good example of a new characters and whatnot. I say that Star Wars Rebels is. Star Wars Rebels is a beautiful example of working within the circle, because they are in the circle still, but they're also trying to make their own circle within the George Lucas predetermined circle that was created years ago.
Yeah.
They're borrowing ideas from Lucas, but they're also creating new concepts and theories. They're exploring the mythology of the Force, things that resonate within the universe of Star Wars. You look at the Bindu. You look at the dark and the light that we're exploring.
The holocron.
The balance. These are things that were foreshadowing things that are going to obviously happen in The Last Jedi. Star Wars Rebels is doing something that nothing else is doing outside of a few choice books. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to be a troll. I'm not trying to complain. I love Star Wars. I love what they're doing for the most part. But I feel like now we're moving on into the fourth movie almost. We have Last Jedi coming out. Then we have Han Solo. I think it's time to break through that circle a bit. You could still explore uncharted territory and still pay respect to some of the old stuff and even utilize the old stuff. So I want to be kicked in the balls. I want to be, oh shit. I don't want them being scared.
Yeah.
I know you're nervous. You know, she's Star Wars is like a hot chick. It's like a hot chick, David, with big boobs. And you're nervous because it's the first time, right? It's the first time. And you're looking at the boobs. You're looking at her ass. And you're like, I don't know if I can do this. I'm really scared right now. I'm really intimidated. But you just got to get down there and put your nose in it first. You know, get her ready for you.
Ease it in. Ease it in.
Use your nose and ease it in afterwards. Don't be afraid. Yeah. So that's do you get where I'm coming from?
No, absolutely. Yeah. Because like we love Star Wars, but there comes a point when is this all we're going to get? And you're right.
We sound like such babies. Is this all we're going to get?
Well, no. I mean, you bring up a good point. I mean, like,
we are such babies, dude.
Especially when Star Wars, when you bring up the whole point about what Kathleen Kennedy's opening message about Star Wars was.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be, we're going to be taking Star Wars to a new age.
And this is the complaint that James Cameron had and George Lucas both had about Star Wars, Force Awakens, and what we're getting so far. Now, no one's complaining about the movies because, again, the movies are enjoyable. I've enjoyed them and I thought they were good movies.
Actually, the funny part is you bring that up. I remember now George Lucas basically kind of like going being asked about Rogue One. He's like, well, it was a good film. And he kind of just shrugged at it.
But it's nothing new. And that's what James Cameron and George Lucas have both been on the record saying. They're good movies, but there's nothing new. There's nothing new. And listen to James Cameron. That guy is a guru. Even if you don't like Avatar and the guy spends way too much of his life underwater.
He's a genius filmmaker. Yeah. He knows what he's talking about.
And George Lucas is as well. He's not the best writer, but the guy's a story man like no other. That guy can come up with concepts that, you know, that just are completely enthralling. And as a filmmaker, the guy is an amazing talent.
It's kind of funny because just recently I actually... started taking video lessons for screenwriting again. And one of the biggest takeaways I got was like, as a creative writer or creative person, it's something that a phrase that Hemingway said, when you write out a story, you're supposed to sit in front of a typewriter and you bleed. Yeah. And I think that honestly, Disney's afraid of bleeding because they're sitting in front of this creative element that's Star Wars and saying, we could do this. We can make a creative element, but we don't want to put that effort in because we might fuck it up.
Yeah. And you know what? I understand that, dude. I understand. And that's why I back up their plans that they had for Force Awakens, Rogue One, and maybe even Han Solo. I get it. 100% understand how they were walking on eggshells. So I get it.
And that's understandable. That basically because like I said earlier, that's baby steps.
Yeah, but
you're taking baby steps.
But now you just got to put the condom on and just go for it.
Yeah.
Have you ever wanted something so bad that you do just about anything for it? Well, that's exactly how we feel about you. That's right. AdamandEve.com wants you so bad. We're giving you 10 free gifts with your first order. You heard me right. That's 10 free gifts to spice up your love life. First, you'll get a sexy surprise for her. Second, an adventurous toy for him. And third, a little something we know you'll both enjoy. Plus, you'll get 6 full-length adult movies on DVD. And number 10, free shipping on your entire order. That's 10 free gifts for you shy types who've never tried Adam and Eve before. Just go to AdamandEve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy, a sexy piece of lingerie, or anything you desire. Just enter offer code DEAL30 at checkout, and you'll get all 10 free gifts, including free shipping. That's offer code DEAL30. That's DEAL30 at AdamandEve.com.
No, you are gone!
Hello, this is Stormtrooper 1. This is just a friendly reminder. Please leave us a review on Stitcher. Go to Stitcher.com and search From the Bat to Tank. Every review left helps us get seen by more people. And we thank you so much. Remember, go to Stitcher.com and search from the back of the tank. Thank you.
It's a so exciting to see in your side.
Hey, you're not supposed to be in the studio.
Whoops!
See that red light? Yeah, that means I'm live and on the air.
This is very, very bad.
Get out.
You need a teacher! I could show you the ways of the Force!
Alright, welcome back everybody to Star Wars From the Back to Tank. We are live today on Solar Eclipse 2017 Day. Whoa! I'm excited.
I am excited.
For lots of Star Wars news. I don't give really two shits about the total solar eclipse. I'll be honest with you. We'll see it again in about, what, 800 years?
Yeah, I value my eyes.
Yeah. I'm all about Star Wars.
Whoa.
That was perfect timing. All right, so some updates from the set of Han Solo. Ron Howard is just a tweeting little machine, always tweeting out things. He shares a photo of an Imperial helmet on set. He also shares a photo of Chewie and more. And, you know, who cares about that necessarily? Because I think we already know, hey, guess what? The Empire's going to be in it. Chewie's going to be in it. But what I find most exciting about this article is, again, something that we always talk about, Dave, and that's the practical effects. If you look at all the photos he's sharing, you can see that these are real standing sets. And I know George Lucas kind of took a lot of hits for his prequels. A lot of people said he overdid the CGI. And, you know, I don't think people realize that he actually also used a lot of practical effects. In fact, I want to say there was an article that came out 2 years ago from a statement from the visual effects coordinator of Revenge of the Sith. And he stated something like 70% of the movie was practical effects. And he says that these movies don't get a fair shake in terms of visual effects. And I think that's because the scenes that George Lucas did CGI, he CGI'd them.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I don't think a lot of mainstream fans or mainstream movie watchers understand is good effects are ones that you don't notice.
Right. And
you
don't notice. And I think that's the problem with the prequels is, yes, there was a lot of practical effects. And the usage of miniatures and models was something that George Lucas also utilized in his old movies as well as the new prequel. But the scenes that he chose to CGI were over CGI'd, the Battle of Mustafar. Even though I love the scene, I love the music, I love the battle, I love the emotion behind the over the top flare of lightsaber battle. I loved it. But Mustafar, the entire thing is one giant CGI.
Yes, it is.
And I think that is what a lot of people, or I should say that moment is what a lot of people hearken back to when they think of the prequels. And they think of the Attack of the Clones scene when the clone army comes in to the Colosseum, where a lot of that was green screen and a CGI. And then they forget about the entire battle scene with the spaceships fighting and battling the droid army as they're taking off of not Mustafar. What's the planet they were on? On Attack of Geonosis.
Geonosis.
Those were all miniatures. The entire planet, the spacecraft, all of them. None of it was CGI. Obviously, there were CGI utilized to sweeten it. But unfortunately, George Lucas's movies, there's a few choice moments in these new prequels that were very high, where a lot of CGI was highly utilized, and it kind of marred the image of the overall package.
Yeah.
And that's something that you're not seeing done at all in Force Awakens, Rogue One, and now moving forward into Han Solo. You're seeing that there's a balance. Even though George Lucas did 65-70% practical, there wasn't a balance because he would go one scene completely miniatures and then the next it would be 100% CGI.
CGI. And that's the thing. It's honestly comes down when you look at the prequels, it comes down to the choices of scenes he uses,
right,
the effects.
The balance.
The one
Unfortunately,
thing,
George Lucas is Skywalker. There's no balance.
For me, for you, it was the Battle of Geonosis. For me, it was probably the simplest scene by far that irritated me because I was like going, why did he have to use CGI for this?
Or C-3PO?
No, it was the scene between Padme and Anakin when they're eating a freaking peach.
Oh, come on.
And I'm like going, he uses the Force to float it over to her.
That's sexy.
And then she eats it.
Yeah.
Out of the air. And I'm like going, that looks so off.
Obi-Wan will be very unhappy.
Yeah, that's right. He's so, Obi-Wan will be very unhappy. I'm like, are you guys trying to be seductive about this?
What I would forget sending the pair. I just send my dick over in the Force.
Just float over to her.
Yeah. Just bring her to me with the Force. Yeah. That's more better. I mean, come on, George Lucas. CGI that in. So dumb. But getting back to a serious topic here for a second, Dave. Looking at these photos and these images that Ron Howard has been tweeting out. Number one, let's look at this scene where he tweets out rough corner of the galaxy. And it's a scene. It looks like an alleyway or a back of a spaceport. And there's not one chroma key, which is blue screen or green screen, anywhere.
Yes.
Nothing. And usually they have practical sets in front and then in the back to make sure the landscape is covered and you can change it in post-production. There's usually green screen and blue screen.
Yeah.
You look at this shot and you don't get a complete 360. You get about a 180 of the set. The entire thing is practical. There's not one. There's no mark. There's no tracking marks. I don't know if you know what tracking marks are, Dave. I'm pretty sure you do.
Yes, I do.
They're either the chroma key little circles, or purples, they're either green color, blue balls. Color, or they're either tennis balls, or sometimes they're just white tracking marks. They're there so that the CGI artist can go in and add elements, or add a background, add smoke, add fire, and so that the scene doesn't look weird. It all tracks together and it looks like it actually belongs there. So you need those. And when you play the video, which I'm going to post this on our website, RaymanDigitalMedia.com, it'll be posted with the show, the on-demand version of the show. It's amazing. The entire thing is practical effects, real fire, real smoke. And that's my thing I always gripe about. I'm like, why in this day and age are we still using CGI fire? Or why are we using CGI fire when fire has been a master effect for years? For years.
And it's not like we can't control it on set. You can. You just have to take the proper precautions.
Yeah, wear lots of sunscreen. Lots of sunscreen.
But like... The one other takeaway I take away from this, just cycling through the pictures, as I've said before, I'm not too psyched about the Han Solo film right now, but the one thing that really does make me feel comfortable about it is the fact that you kind of get the gist that Ron Howard is really putting a lot of effort into this project.
And he's very enthusiastic.
He's very enthusiastic. And for me... just on a PR status, that is something that Han Solo needed.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's coming off of basically the first two directors were fired right off set because they were for creative differences. Ron Howard is put there not just to actually bring his expertise and bring in, like, his knowledge of making a good film, but he's also there to kind of ease everyone in and say, hey, I have this. You guys can trust me. I'm having fun with this. This is what I want to do. And it is kind of his enthusiasm in the pictures is kind of infectious.
Yeah.
It's kind of like he is enjoying this. He is actually sitting there and basically taking random pictures of Chewbacca, just Chewbacca.
Yeah.
That seems to be his focus.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I think it's fun for him to do that. And it makes us feel like we're part of the set. And I know that there was so much mystery surrounding Force Awakens, and rightfully so. But now that we're through that, I like that they're willing to share a lot more things and at least show behind the scenes aspects of the set. And I think it's smart, especially because, like what you mentioned, the PR nightmare that Han Solo was facing with the firing of Chris Miller and Phil Lord. They needed to kind of repair that. And if this is an attempt to do that, this enthusiasm is fake, then whatever. You know what? The point is that Ron Howard's doing his job as a director to not only save the movie in terms of the story and the execution of the film, but also trying to save and salvage the PR aspect so that there's positivity surrounding this film and not negativity, which is which goes a long way in terms of the enthusiasm and excitement that you have on set, which leads to better performances, better better aspects of everything with the crew doing their jobs on a day to day basis. So I think it's good what he's doing. Next bit of information is Sana Staros. Sorry. Sana Staros is a star of Marvel's Star Wars number 34. This is a character we talked about briefly when we were going over in our Patreon show when we were breaking down the Screaming Citadel issues 1-5. Is that what it was? And she was actually a fairly big part in the Citadel.
Kind of.
Well, her part was there just to say she was a lesbian, basically. Yeah. And so was Dr. Aphra. They were into the gals. And now she's going to be headlining Star Wars number 34, The 13 Crates. The article says ever since she appeared in the main Star Wars comic and caused Han Solo. And caused what? Oh, a freak out because she was Han Solo's wife in 2015. Sana Staros proved to be a very interesting character, mainly through the interactions not only with our main, but also new cast of characters, including Princess Leia and Dr. Aphra. What I always wanted to know and never found out, says the blogger, was why the likes of Han Solo or Lando would work with her in the first place. True, she is good with the blaster, but so are many other. The first of the two issues featuring Star Wars Underworld offers the answer. She might be the best of them. Now, I'm hoping they don't actually do that, but she's better than... Come on, let's get over ourselves here.
I think it's important to show that she is a strong character, but not the best of them.
Yeah,
I don't like it when
Han Solo is always being dummied down, and I don't want to get into that. We talked about that on our Patreon show that Han Solo is being made to be into a doofus so that Princess Leia can get smart, look smart. Like, we don't need that. Han Solo wasn't a doofus in the movies, and Princess Leia was belligerent and very what was it? Princessy. She was I want my way. God damn it. And Han Solo wasn't having it. I felt like the chemistry they had in those movies, I thought, was perfect for the sexual tension that was needed there to build up their relationship. So it worked. But Han Solo was never dummy down. And now I'm getting off topic here. But the reason why I bring this up is I want to go ahead and say that we should cover this as a show for our Patreon special.
Oh, absolutely. I think Sana Staros is actually a really fun character.
Yeah, I think we should actually review Star Wars number 34, and then we'll delve into Sana as a character as part of that discussion. It'll just be a one-shot discussion that we'll have on our Patreon page, patreon.com/RainmanDigital, and we'll probably put that out next week, I'm assuming, if we have a chance to read it. I'm speaking for you right now, Dave. You can read that, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. And the reason why I'm even bringing this up, though, for this show is Marvel Comics and the Star Wars title within Marvel Comics, I think, is a good example of some potentials for movies.
Oh, yeah. We've said that multiple times.
And, you know, I'm baffled that we're looking at these rumors of Han Solo and Jabba the Hutt and Yoda and Obi-Wan when we have a good handful of new characters that are connected to our old characters, but they can stand on their own two feet and tell whole new stories that would expand the universe.
Yeah.
And Dr. Aphra and Sana Staros, I think, are two characters that can hold up a movie, particularly Dr. Aphros. Dr. Aphra, not Aphros. Whoa. That raises. Dr. Aphra is highly involved in the Star Wars version of the occult. She's an archaeologist. She's heavily involved in the mysticism side of Star Wars. I mean, tell me that concept, a Star Wars Indiana Jones, basically. Essentially, that's what she is.
Yes.
A Star Wars Lara Croft. You were to say that in a pitch meeting at a Hollywood table, and I don't know an executive that wouldn't be jumping at that idea.
Yeah, and that's why I find our earlier discussion, it's like
the Lara Croft or Indiana Jones of the Star Wars universe. That's all I would say, David.
Yeah.
In the pitch room,
and it would,
and let it marinate. Like, hey guys, don't say anything. Let that marinate and think of all the possibilities. Those are the things they should be grabbing at for the future of the Star Wars standalone films. Ideas that can really grow and be fruitful for the franchise and really expand the universe of Star Wars. And I think Starros and Dr. Aphra both are two really interesting characters. Starros, not as much yet. I'm hoping with Star Wars 34, we'll really kick open those doors. But she is interesting. Her character development is interesting. In terms of what she can deliver, I'm not quite sold 100%. But if you were to bring her into a story, into a movie, like a Dr. Aphra movie, and then expand her there to where maybe eventually she gets her own run at a movie.
Fantastic.
Okay. Yeah. I think stuff like that would work.
And it works also because the strength, Dr. Aphra more so because of the surrounding characters that she has. I mean, dude, wouldn't you like to see the two droids and Chrysanthin?
Oh, absolutely would.
A evil version of Chewbacca and an evil version of R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yeah.
And they're fantastic in the comics. They're one of the most intriguing characters in the comics as side characters.
It would be a huge success. It would appeal to the side of the fandom that has been wanting, you know, darker stories. They can really use those story elements that are already established in the comic books to really push the story forward or the universe forward. I mean, and if you look at Dr. Aphra and her connection to Darth Vader and Boba Fett and Palpatine, I mean, you want to talk about a standalone? That would be amazing. Imagine doing a Dr. Aphra story where she is the focus, but Vader's like the co-star. He's in it more than he was in Rogue One, but he's also not consuming the entire movie.
Yeah, he's not consuming the entire movie.
Can you imagine the ticket sales for that movie?
Yeah.
It would be insane.
And it worked, too, because like they did it in Rogue One, and Rogue One was a box office success.
Yeah.
And they didn't have Vader throughout the entire thing. Vader was in it in like.
They really didn't use Vader to sell the movie.
Yeah.
They used him to give us that finale that we needed, that ending after such a dark, depressing ending. You needed something to like not care about that depression. Like, holy shit. So it was a genius. And I stand by my original thought on that. That's a genius way to end Rogue One.
It was.
It was a great way to send the fans off packing with huge hard-ons. Yeah. I mean, I can't pinpoint one person in that theater that wasn't ear to ear, you know, salivating with lust for blood.
I know. It was like right after Rogue One, and you see the explosion. And like, I kid you not, I'm in the theater and everyone's like depressed. But then the scene that basically just absolutely took the movie over was hallway, hear the breathing, lightsaber goes on. Everyone starts getting giddy in the seats and starts like cheering for themselves, watching Vader cleave through people. And I'm like going, yeah, this is actually a really good way to end it. You don't want to end it on a sad note.
Right.
You want to end it on, okay, here we go. We're going to go into hyperdrive now. It's into the original trilogy. Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just taking and borrowing from that idea. I mean, yes, we don't want to overuse Darth Vader, and I'm not saying anytime soon.
No, but you got to use him smartly.
Right. If they use him to connect the stories and make things feel cohesive, I think that would be really cool to do a story like that. That would be a great way to tell a movie. And that's one thing that Marvel Comics, most of them, not all of them, some of them are regurgitating on old things, but there's various stories in the Marvel comics right now, as well as the books, that are really pushing the envelope in terms of Star Wars.
You get those moments when they sprinkle in like the characters that we all know, but it helps propel the story forward.
Right.
You know, that's why I say it baffles my mind that the Star Wars creative crew are masters in the other medias. Video games, comics, books, TV, but they want to take baby steps in the films.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got to get ready to close this show out, David, for this week. Before we close out, though, we're going to be doing something in the next couple weeks. I'm not quite sure on the date yet, but we're going to give listeners the chance to win 2 months free of our Back to Tank shows on Patreon, where we break down additional content, books, comic books, additional discussions. And, yeah, we're going to do a little win your contest or win David's Patreon membership. I think that's what we're going to do. Something like that, where you can call into the show and you can battle David on Star Wars knowledge. And if you win, you get a free 2-month pass to our Patreon, Star Wars exclusive Patreon shows. Now, Dave, things that we're going to want to cover on Patreon soon coming up. The Son of Star Wars, Star Wars number 34.
Yep.
We're going to be covering that. I think that show will be out hopefully next week if our schedules work out. We're also going to start covering Infernal Squadron, the book.
Dude, I'm so psyched for that book.
I'm upset with myself. I have not read it yet. I purchased it yesterday, so I will start reading it. And once that is read, we will do a complete review and breakdown. And it isn't going to be the standard review like people do for books and movies. This is Star Wars from the Back to Tank version, which means we're going to talk about it in terms of what it means, or in relation to what it means to the Star Wars universe. Also, one thing I'd really like to do, and I know we kind of missed the boat. It's been out for about a year and a half now, maybe longer.
But not enough people are talking about it.
We need to start breaking down the first Darth Vader volume, Marvel installment. What are they called? Because they have another Darth Vader going on right now, too.
It's called Star Wars Darth Vader. That's the main title.
Because they have a new one now, too, taking place right after Revenge of the Sith. But we're going to do the first one that came out in 2015 that takes place between Empire and New Hope. And I feel like it's something we have to do because there is so much mythology being built up around Darth Vader. Not just in terms of what he was doing between New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, but also his emotional state and where he's at psychologically as Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, it is.
So I want to break that down. We're going to start doing that as well. And that's all coming up either next week, starting with Staros, and then following into September, we'll do Darth Vader and Inferno Squadron. So go to patreon.com/rainmandigital and subscribe to the podcast here. And once you do that, you'll gain access to all of our Star Wars discussions. So check it out. David, thank you for being here today.
Thank you. May the Force be with us.
Hello, this is Stormtrooper One. And if you've missed any portion of the show, you can always head over to fromthebacktotank.com and listen to the show at your leisure. We're also on Stitcher, Smart Radio, Stitcher.com, search Bacta, and add us to your favorites. Thank you. And listen responsibly. And may the Force be with you. And long live. Thank you for listening to From the Back to Tank. And From the Back to Tank is executive produced by Michael Flores and Dustin Lucas. Hosted by Michael Flores, David Sabal. You can find out more about our show by going to www.fromthebacktotank.com. You can also find us on Twitter at From Back to Tank, as well as Facebook, facebook.com/fromthebacktotank.